This is CliffCentral.com. Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, folks. Welcome to Auto Central, brought to you by Auto Trader, the trusted motoring marketplace. We have got a somewhat full studio. Martin, Lawrence, how are you, boys?
How's it, Sai?
What's happening? What's
nice
been
to be
going?
Back.
Yeah, good to be back. You've been doing some travels, but we're going to get into that just now.
Yeah.
And I did see your article, and it actually looks like you had quite a good time, quite an eye-opener.
Trolling in Goa.
Yeah, well, fortunately, the car is quite good as well.
Well, that's fantastic. So we'll get onto that just now when we do our review of the new Mahindra, what is it, an XUV300?
That's correct.
Is that how you say it?
Yes.
Fantastic.
Actually, XUV300.
Oh, Sherbert.
So it's not 300.
No. They made a point of saying it must be 00.
300. They're quite sticky manufacturers about how you...
Yeah, yep. You can't call
it... Well, I suppose it's like naming a child and someone cocks up the child's name. You can't really have a go at them.
There are some manufacturers, especially where there is a 00 in the name, where they don't want you to call it a 007 or a 008.
Mm.
James Bond.
Yeah.
And it's a 2008.
But if you want to call your child Shakina, that's probably your own. That's probably your own.
So it's a 300.
Yes.
It's a little bit strange. I mean, I suppose you could have called it a 3U or something like that. I don't know. You know, really change it up a bit. But that's just the way it goes. Hello, George. How are you doing?
Going, Utah.
Yeah, very good. Thank you. Very good. Well, let's get into it. And I see that article came out last week. Government to introduce new vehicle taxes to push people towards public transport. Now, this has been going on for a while. We've spoken about that Arto bill and all this kind of stuff, and obviously there's a plan. The Department of Transport has published, it's called its Green Transport Strategy for 2018 up until 2050, which lays out plans for new taxes and changes to existing ones. So the strategy outlines the department's plans for the road, rail, and aviation sectors with a focus on the country's international commitments to reduce emissions. And it goes on, blah, blah, blah. But essentially what these guys want to do is they want to get people from, gas-guzzling vehicles into electric vehicles. They want to get people out of cars and onto rail. And they obviously want people to when they're going into the city, they're going to have congestion taxes. So I just want to run through some of these points that have come out of this green strategy. And I thought maybe we could debate it a little bit this morning. But the first one that comes up is a congestion tax. So in consultation with local government, the department said that it will assist with the development of regulatory and policy frameworks for levying a congestion charge on vehicles entering central business hubs. So essentially, if you're going into Sandton, if you're going into, the CBD, you are going to be charged a tax before you enter the city.
It's all great. It works in London, it works in Mexico, it works in Los Angeles, it works in lots of other cities around the world. I want to know.
Yes, I know
how
what
they're going to police it.
Well, this is like the e-tolls, right?
Well, it's exactly the same, isn't it?
Fail.
You know, instead of taxing the crap out of everybody, why not just incentivize people by giving tax breaks if you drive an electric car or, that kind of thing. Rather incentivize than tax.
So that's
drop the import taxes on electric vehicles and components, and don't drop the taxes on normal internal combustion engines.
I couldn't agree more. I think that's just a go-to. I mean, it's not that I'm a politician in any way, shape, or form, but that for me is the go-to with what happens in this country. It's like the people will just have to pay, and we just levy the people and tax the people, and it's always about the people. And it's not it's a case of make it harder for them because it's more taxes, but like to George's point, rather incentivize people to change their
behaviors.
Yeah. So congestion tax. So now we're going to be driving into the city, and to your point, how they're going to police it and do it. They're obviously going to have park and rides, and they're going to have
London
to run shuttle services and stuff like that. But now, so think about this. So now you're driving on the road, and if you've taken the highway anywhere, you're paying tolls, okay? Then you're going to, before you get into the city, you're going to have to now park at some kind of park and ride venue, so you're going to be paying for parking. Then you're going to have to pay to get onto this public transport. So, in fact, is it actually going to just push your traveling costs, through the roof? Do you actually have to go into the city, or can you just have the meeting via Skype? Depending what you're going into.
Well,
do you know what I'm saying?
I'm all in favor of non-office based work.
Yeah.
I think the concept of sitting in an office for the traditional kind of office job is it's pretty much come and gone.
Yeah. If I could do Cliff Central from my home office,
yes,
I would.
So yeah, we all just, you know, tuned in via our own little, you know,
yeah,
put your microphone in a room that's got the best acoustics.
In the end, I reckon this whole tax story is just another way to make the to bulk the motorist for more money.
Well,
I mean, this is a motoring show, so we're not going to, you know, get too much into what Martin's saying, but I can give you a book full of reasons why coming to an office is a good idea. And that digital nomadism is not as successful as you may think. Most people that are consider themselves digital nomads and don't work from a central culture, central office, central place, make no more than about 3,000 euros a month.
Okay.
And that's a fact. Because there is a whole bunch of reasons why, and most of these digital nomads then eventually find places to go where other digital nomads are. What is that called?
Shared work environment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think what Martin is saying is to be able to do something like that, it means we avoid sitting in an hour, enough. 2 hours of
travel. I was just addressing his comment about office space being come and gone.
Oh, look, I enjoy office space. It's nice to have a desk, but it's avoid sitting in traffic for 2 hours in either direction every single day.
No, absolutely. I mean, this morning was a nightmare for me. I mean, it took me an hour and 40 minutes to get here. It really did. And I can tell you, I'll put my hand up. I've decided, it was actually on Friday, that I'm no longer going to let traffic upset me. And we'll see how long this lasts.
And now, in an ironic twist, it took me only an hour and 10 minutes to get from Pretoria to here.
Jeez, luck. So you did how many k's an hour and 10? I think my journey is not even 15.
I did about 60 k's in an hour and 10.
Yeah, and so I did 15 in an hour and 40.
So the fact of the matter is, we won't avoid traffic. Because whether you're a digital nomad, or whether you're an office-based person, or whether you're a sales rep, you are going to have to drive somewhere or go somewhere. You can't sit in your pajamas at home all day.
Absolutely.
You have to, in order to make an income, you have to have customers. In order to have customers, you have to visit them.
Yep.
In order to make the sale, because nobody's just going to do business with you over the phone, and you can, you can operate that way. So traffic is, unfortunately,
you're always going to have traffic. But
so then we need to make the commute as comfortable as possible
and affordable as well.
Which is where they're saying now with public transport. So
but that's nonsense.
Martin doesn't want to argue.
Let's look at one other thing: a trip from Pretoria to Owatambo International on the car train.
Yeah,
it is $180 one way.
One way,
But that is because it's to the airport. You take a trip anywhere else to any other train station is cheaper.
Mm.
So it's, for some reason, that airport destination
tourist,
but that's one stop before.
That's part of my. That's if I could call my travels a commute.
Yes,
that would be part of it because I fly a lot.
Yeah, you'd have to exactly, but they're just charging you more because they know you're going to the airport.
So that's $360
some sort. Yeah,
both ways.
Yeah,
excluding parking at the hard train station and everything else.
Yeah.
And in the end, it costs me more than if I were to pay e-tolls.
Yeah.
And park my car for the 2 days and drive there on fuel, it would cost me less than just taking the car train there and back.
Somebody didn't think through that.
But then they're going to throw the convenience thing at you. They're going to say, oh, but you get on the train and
but it's not convenient either because you have to get off and get on again at Marlborough and you have to stand and the aircon doesn't work and yak. I hate that contraption.
The contraption.
And that's when it's working.
And that's when it's working, yeah.
And what about Uber? Is Uber not cheaper?
No, from my house to the... Oh, that's the other thing. From my house to the Gautrain station... It's 6.5 kilometers, almost $60 in Uber the last time I did this.
And to the airport?
I'm too scared to find out.
Probably about 300 Rand.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if you think about, 300 Rand one way versus 180 plus 60, you know, depends.
Mm.
It could actually even out in an Uber.
All in all, I think we're just realizing that it's becoming expensive to travel in this country. Doesn't matter how you travel.
But the moment public transport becomes more expensive than private transport, then we have a real problem.
Absolutely.
And to try and tax private transport in this way to get people into public transport, they're chasing wind.
Look, there's multiple parts to the story, and that is, you know, the public transport, trying to chase people into public transport is just one of them. There's a lot of other stuff that they're trying to do, which I completely agree with.
Yeah, so, I mean, let's just have a look at this. There's an environmental levy. So, obviously, in consultation with stakeholders, the Department of Transport plans to review the current levels of the environmental levy on new motor vehicles that obviously have CO2 emissions and expand the tax to include commercial vehicles.
Absolutely.
To more effective influence energy efficiency. So they're going to. So, I mean, if you drive a gas guzzler, you're gonna pay. Then there's the licensing system. So what they're saying here is that the annual taxing of vehicles based on the emissions through the annual car licensing renewal system. They're also saying, they said something along the lines of every 3 years you're going to have to take your car to be roadworthied, and if not...
And who's going to make money out of that? Oh,
Disney centers. But now, this, it's a system that works in the UK. Every year you take your car for an MOT.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if you fail, you don't get your license. Fix your damn car. Mm-hmm. It solves two problems there. Unroadworthy cars on the road.
Yeah.
And cars, it forces you to maintain your vehicle.
It does force you to maintain your vehicle.
I mean, there's one of these YouTube videos that it's called Mechanical Fails.
Yeah.
People bring their cars to, and then the mechanics film the
problem with
people
vehicle.
Opening up, you know, the drain plugs on the bottom of a car sump, and the oil doesn't run out, it oozes out.
So it glugs out.
Yeah, that doesn't glug, it oozes. It's turned to tar because people don't maintain their vehicles.
Yeah.
If you want your license this next year, maintain your vehicle. Make sure your tires are good. Mm. Make sure the engine's good. It's not burning oil.
Yeah.
And if it is, fix it.
And there's people who can do this for you, and it's not going to cost you an arm and a leg.
Learn to do it yourself.
What about car life limits, where they say that if your car's got more than 400,000 kilometers on it, off the road?
Nonsense.
Well, I don't know. That can't apply to an electric car.
Yeah, you make a valid point, because
you can do hundreds of thousands of kilometers on an electric car.
Well, you can with a petrol car as well. I mean, I ran an Audi A4 up to 560,000 Ks. I mean, it's still perfect.
They are
clean,
guys that
and everything.
Have got a million kilometers on their cars.
Yeah.
But they still run, because why?
Can they maintain?
Cars
they
are maintained.
So, I don't know. I think that one's...
I think that's an effort to transform to clean energy.
Mm.
And it's not a bad strategy to get electric cars on the road. You know, I think it's a good strategy. The faster we convert to clean energy, the better for this planet.
I've got no problem if your car's got 400,000 Ks on it and it's running smoothly and its emissions are what
no,
it
that's
was
all fine.
Like 3 days, you know,
that,
after you bought it.
That's all
it was
fine.
Brand new.
I just think it's a strategy to get the cars out of the system.
Yeah.
And to bring clean energy cars onto the road.
Yeah, and then obviously there's another one here called freight. So it will assist in the development of regulations to ensure that freight vehicles may only enter urban hubs during off-peak hours,
i.e. no trucks on the freeway during rush hour.
Which is a great idea.
Is a good idea.
I'm absolutely behind that.
You know, I think that goes further to say that they'll have greenbelt railroad routes,
yes,
which will be incentivized.
Well,
so
I mean, you only need to drive the Joburg to Durban route to realize that our rail infrastructure is really nowhere at the moment with the number of trucks that are on those roads, and they could get half of that stuff. You know, Durban's the port,
I think most
of that stuff to Johannesburg.
The rails are there. It's the trains that aren't.
Yeah.
The trains are screwed.
Yeah.
So you know, getting those trains into a running state. You know, it's not like we have to lay the rail.
Mm. No, the rail's there. Yeah.
There's also a time factor. It's 10 hours to get your container from Durban to Joburg.
Yeah.
It's about 3 days to do that by rail.
Yeah, but
that's all right.
But with forward planning, then that's not a train smash, Lawrence.
I'm just saying that is why rail failed. It went the way of the dodo.
Mm.
Because it was quicker to just throw it on a truck, boom, and you're there.
Yeah. I just feel like the motorists are being victimized, yeah? Putting it all under a nice green banner is fine and well, but what about the open coal fires up here in Gauteng over through the winter? What about the buses and the trucks? Old 30-year-old buses and trucks and buses spewing smoke everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, I mean,
the dirtiest of 20-year-old cars are cleaner than anything from 30-year-old truck.
Well, we know that, you know, upkeep and maintenance is a massive problem.
Well, I mean, trucks do over 1 million kilometers, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And aeroplanes as well. That's the other big culprit.
Well, yeah, I don't think we're going to get away from jet-propelled transport in a long time. You know, the only leap to moving from one city to the other, you know, 10-hour flights like from here to London, is Elon Musk's idea of a rocket, which again is fuel. Mm. Yeah, there's no electric anything that's going to do that in that kind of time.
Mm.
So I don't think we're ever in our lifetime going to see anything but fuel burnt for long distance travel.
Except you get fuel burnt. There are some airports, international airports, that don't allow specific aeroplanes on their runways anymore to come around because they're burning. The emissions are not up to scratch, okay. So they're not allowed there.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if you imagine it, if just all the cars went away in its current form in the world, the jet fuel that we're burning, is that really going to make
a massive, you know,
a massive difference? No, the cars are going to make a massive difference.
Yeah.
18%.
It's a freaking one-fifth. One-fifth of the planet is being...
So what about the other 80%?
But when
who's going to address that?
No, but take that 20% out, though. But, I mean, then you still got industry and, you know...
That's the thing.
Mm. I mean, so coal burning power stations are a big part of that.
Yeah. So I still feel like the motorists are being victimized here with this new tax. It's all about making money. They can cloak it in a nice little green coat.
Yeah.
But in the end, it all comes down to money.
It should be incentivized and not
taxed. I agree with you. It should be incentivized and not taxed. Anyway, before we ruin our day, here's a quickie little story. Some German dude made a lucky escape after following his sat nav into a canal.
What a dumbass.
I know. So how's this?
Is he looking through your front windscreen, dude?
The 69-year-old was driving in the dark and rain in the town of Edenwald in northwest Germany. His GPS system led him across the grounds of a peat factory and then over the edge of a coastal canal. He managed to escape through the side window before his car sank. Thoroughly drenched, he walked along the road until a motorist stopped and phoned for help.
You know, I don't know what car was this.
I have no idea. It doesn't say what it was.
If it was in Germany, it would be a BMW or an Audi.
Yeah.
Or Mercedes.
Never mind.
I'm hoping it's...
maybe he was using Waze.
I'm hoping it's not Waze or Google Maps, but, you know, and I don't know what the answer to this is, but, you know, it could be part of my whole bugbear of, you know, car companies shouldn't try and be satellite navigation companies.
I've had a GPS.
69 years old.
I've had a GPS trying to get me from Langebahn to some other place.
What GPS?
Garmin. GPS trying to get me. This
to be honest with you, Garmin, I think the ship
this was a few on. Years ago.
Ship sailed on.
And I literally ended up on the rocks, and this thing wanted to take me by the shortest route.
My word.
But you still have to drive with your eyes.
Yeah. So I stopped when I hit the rocks. I stopped.
The GPS might be telling you to turn left here, but if you're on a wall with ocean on the one side and rocks on the other,
you probably should turn left here.
A little bit of common sense.
Look through the freaking window.
Yeah. Anyway, so
if you drive your car into a canal because the GPS told you to,
yeah.
You don't deserve to be
But surely when this dude turned, there must have been something in his way. I mean,
a fence, a cow.
Surely there's not like just a road saying drive off this edge.
A well-known manufacturer. I had one of their cars on test a couple of years ago, and I asked this thing to take me to the Department of Home Affairs. It took me out to the north of Pretoria.
Probably didn't want it.
Yeah. It's like, no,
me out to the north of Pretoria, all the way out past Roslyn, and there where the settlements and everything eventually ended, there was just felt on each side. It told me, you've reached your destination.
But you had the same thing when you went to that one dealer in Nigel.
So, GPS should not be trusted implicitly.
Well, I remember the problems Apple had, because the only place that really mapped properly was California and San Francisco, and the rest of the world it got it wrong. South Africa wasn't exempt to that.
I still don't use Apple Maps as a result.
It works now, but right at the beginning it was a bloody disaster.
Google Maps is the way to go.
Yeah, always.
I don't know, I like
Trust Waze, in Google. Google is the overlord.
Right, guys, I see here, so Parliament's Portfolio Committee on Transport accepted the final amendments to the Administrative Adjudication of Road Traffic Offenders Bill yesterday. This was last week. The bill will now go to the National Assembly for concurrence and will then be ready to be signed in by law by President Cyril Ramaphosa. So it looks like that's all going ahead, and we're going to, that demerit system's going to
Once
kick
again,
in.
Which I ask you.
Okay.
How are they going to police it?
Well, I have a bigger question.
Well, I don't know, because, again, I mean, listen, I think this is probably the topic that we've spoken about most in the show. And until you've got proper policing where the police actually, understand the law, and B, can enforce the law, nothing is ever going to work. No public transport system, no road safety nonsense, driver's license.
This auto bill hinges around one principle, which is actually not compatible with our legal system. And that's guilty until proven innocent.
Correct.
That's not how our legal system works.
Yes.
So I predict that if this auto bill goes through, that there will be plenty of legal challenges in this.
I sometimes wonder if this isn't done because there's a lot. I mean, think about it. Trying to get this law passed, there's lawyers that are making money if it doesn't get passed.
Yeah.
We could sit here and surmise and come up with a thousand kind
the
of.
The thing is, they have this system in the UK, they have it in America. Do X amount, you're going to get points deducted off your license. When
sure.
the points are done, they take your license away.
Okay.
We have, I don't know how many people who are currently driving around
without a license.
Without licenses, so they don't care.
Yeah.
I don't have a license, what are you going to take away?
I mean, what are you...
I'm going to get in the taxi and I'm going to drive it with passengers tomorrow. What are you going to do to me if you... Or are you going to take away my... wallet? How are you going
to
police it?
Well, it needs to be policed. This is where the police force need to actually pull finger and start policing.
And then you get stroppy with the guy on the side of the road after he pulls you off for speeding, and then he says, oh, okay, well, another 3 points, thank you very much. And then you lose your license. The problem is...
That's going to red card you.
Yeah. The problem is people are going to now say, but I need my license to make a living.
Yeah, but then don't drive like a chop.
Yeah.
That's what but to your point, you can only drive like a chop if you know that you can get away with driving like a chop.
So then you're sitting and you're doing calculations in here, right, okay, the traffic's bad, so I'm going to go in the yellow line and I'm going to drive all the way to the front of the queue and then push in.
Mm-hmm.
If I get caught, that's three points. Got five left, so that means I can...
You're going to start doing like a work for another week and then I'm done.
Yeah, you're going to start doing mental arithmetic.
Yeah, so we'll wait and see what happens. But I agree with you. That is the one thing that one of the political parties is screaming and shouting about, saying that...
Oh, really?
Yeah. They're moaning and saying that it's not constitutional and it doesn't line up with what our laws say.
The concept of administrative adjudication, that's where the problem comes in.
Yeah.
Because they assume you're guilty until you can prove yourself innocent. And that's not how it's supposed to work.
Yeah. But then again, if you've been caught red-handed, are guilty.
Sure.
You can prove yourself otherwise.
Do we have traffic court here in this country?
No.
Because I know that's something they've got in the States. No, you can go to traffic court
and have your...
And you can plead your case. Mm.
So you can go and judge Judy.
Magistrate's court.
Yeah.
You end up in front
just
of the magistrate.
Just go to the magistrate.
And they could care less.
Nope.
5 points for you.
Anyway, back to Germany. Cars come before the planet, say most Germans. So, despite widespread concerns about the consequences of global warming and air pollution in general, Germans show a marked reluctance to end their love affair with the car, according to a recent poll.
Well, there's no polar bears in Germany, so they don't care.
Only 27.7% were prepared to consider making the sacrifice, according to the survey of some 2,500 respondents. And this is obviously where they would, could do without their cars for the sake of the environment. 63.9% responded now.
With Martin's 2,501.
Yeah, exactly.
So no, right,
nine,
right.
There we go. Not me.
So, and as many as 55.9% came out against the government's plans to terminate the licenses of cars powered by the internal combustion engine by 2030 onwards.
Right. So, we've got 10 years.
Germans, yes, I just dig their cars.
Well, all the best ones come from Germany, so.
True.
That's... That's what you say.
Well, some of the best ones.
No, some of the best ones do. All right, guys.
Have you driven a Prius?
I haven't. I'm actually, I won't lie to you. I wish there was
some
dealership out there just going, I want to give those Auto Central guys electric cars to drive. Mm-hmm. I really would like to drive an electric car for a month.
I'm
going to
admit something shameful. I haven't driven the Prius, but I've driven the Auris Hybrid, which is the same thing mechanically.
Yes.
Just in a nicer looking body. And I've found it extremely difficult to hate.
Aha.
I'm speechless.
Yeah. I drove a Lexus, the new Lexus UX last week. Yeah. Also a hybrid vehicle. Mm-hmm. Absolutely stunning motor car.
Because you can hear yourself think.
Well, the thing is, it's a hybrid, so you when you pull away, it's quiet. And yes. You're cruising around Camps Bay in traffic, it's dead quiet. It's absolutely lovely.
Something about that.
And as soon as you go over 15 k's an hour, the engine kicks in, and then when you have combustion engine, so you drop your 15 k's.
Sure, that's
back
where you need an Infiniti, what's it, Q50S hybrid.
Well, what does that do?
You can cruise on electric power on the freeway for like kilometers at a stretch.
Oh, and you can select to do that?
No, the car does it automatically.
Oh, really? BMW i8, same.
And then you can drive it like you stole it, and it'll still return less or better than 8 liters per 100.
Sure. So where to go?
They're turning conversion. Exactly.
We just got to get them around the corner of that desk, and then
the force has got to them.
Right, let's get into some Formula One, and I thought this was really interesting because, I mean, you know, like I've said to you guys in the past, I've never been a massive fan. Yes, I enjoy watching a Grand Prix, but I recall back in the day because I just remember that black John Player special.
Oh,
are you talking
so
about
good.
The new Haas?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know what car it was, but I know that it was a JPS. Lotus. It was my mom's mate.
The black and gold.
The black and gold.
John Player special.
Yeah, John Player special. So, and the reason I'm going on to this, so tobacco giant BAT, so British American Tobacco, are returning to Formula One with McLaren. British American Tobacco, which had its Formula One team before selling to Honda in 2006, is returning to the sport under a multi-year global partnership with McLaren. This confuses the hell out of me. McLaren Applied Technologies will work with BAT on areas including battery technology and advanced materials. The two companies will share best practice, innovation, know-how, and mutual experience. What does a...
Hashtag cigarette racing.
Yeah, well, so cigarette racing, but these guys are obviously... BAT are pushing their... And it's in asterisks here. Potentially reduced risk products. That means e-cigarettes... And all that kind of...
The vape special.
The vape special.
Like all going smoke-free, heat not burn.
Going up in smoke.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
Ford. So, but I mean, that's it. So now, look here, BAT back, cigarette guys are back.
Well, I don't know if I want to call my team Bat.
No, but...
McLaren Bat.
McLaren Bat. But they're there. That's the thing. Ferrari's partnership with Philip Morris International, whose mission Win Now initiative focuses on smoke-free, heat-not-burn products. Again, so it looks like these guys have. I don't know. Maybe there was a loophole in some of those. The tobacco because it's not tobacco.
They're more than welcome to compete.
Yes,
they're more than welcome to be a sponsor. You're just not allowed to
advertise
on the cars.
Mm. Yeah, if you look at that car, you don't see any.
There's not a single. Yeah.
Marlboro. So who the hell is Bat? I mean, you only know who Marlboro is.
No, that's also true.
So you know, I suppose Lawrence is right. As long as there's no cigarette brand.
So you're saying they won't put Bat on this car?
Well, they might put
there
Bat.
There will be no branding. I mean, look.
But
at
who's Bat?
Well, if
Bat's not a cigarette.
No, Bat's not a cigarette.
So you'll have the Philip Morris insignia.
Yeah.
That'll be on the car, but there will be no product advertising on the vehicles.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There's some strategy behind this.
No, there's obviously strategy behind
it's money.
This. Yeah, well, obviously the F1 teams are doing it
for
the money.
Yeah, but the sponsorship has to yield some value for Bat. Mm. What is that? I don't think we've got
the
whole story.
We can have some Formula One cars at our new electronic cigarette launch.
There we go.
Or something
when they launch those things.
I don't know, maybe you'll get F1 technology in your new vape device. Who knows?
Who knows?
push to pass.
And then I see there's a
push to pass launch control.
I'm actually going to be vaping on the podium. You're not going to get champagne anymore. You're going to check Hamilton busting out a vape.
Have you seen these oaks in their cars?
No,
in the
it's ridiculous
when they vape.
With the smoke. It's
I'm one of those.
Okay. I'm flabbergasted. I was sitting at a traffic light, and because I drive an SUV, I see into the car next to me, and here's this guy sitting, and he breathes out, and the entire car just fills up with white smoke. Yeah. And the robot turns green, and he hesitates. Why? Because you can't freaking see
the robot, exactly.
You know what?
Can you even see when
you
that
know the thing? No. Yes, no, look, you can't really. You
yes,
can't
no,
really.
Look.
But the last thing is your car ends up smelling like cookies.
Ah. Well, that's if you
or
smoke
cherries.
Cookies and
or
cream.
Cherries. Or cinnamon. Mine smells like cinnamon.
Okay. So you've always got a car air freshener.
There you go.
Permanent air freshener.
I will say this though. Yes. The new Formula One cars.
Yes.
Almost all the teams have launched their
correct.
Cars. They're stunning looking vehicles.
They are. Right?
Yeah. Mm. I love the new liveries, especially the Haas Formula One team. Harkening back to the JPS. So there's a
you
black
used
car
a very big fancy word there. Was it livery?
Yeah.
Just explain what that is.
Livery is the paint scheme on the car.
Okay, thank you.
Well, it's not the paint scheme that stays for the races though. It's their introductory
launch.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the Ferrari, they will never race in that car.
Yeah.
There's just no way.
But it's quite interesting. They actually hire well-known designers to design the stickers and the paint jobs on these new cars. Mm.
Yeah.
One of the well-known ones, Peter Stevens, very well-known car stylist and highly regarded as well.
Yeah,
and he did a lot of work for Williams back in the day.
Sure.
Yeah, just for this unveiling, and then the actual race cars go out and they look nothing. Exactly. Like
water
Peter's
down
work.
A bit.
Yeah.
You know, Red Bull's livery was beautiful. Red Bull's livery.
I do quite like the Alfa Romeo team. Oh
yes,
well.
Yeah,
the whole car is just like tiny little Alfa Romeo symbols. All
oh really?
Like that maroon color.
I was disappointed
nice.
in Williams' livery. It looked a little bit
understated,
sheepish. No launch control.
So, but I mean, is the season going to be any different to any other season?
Well, the changes they've made to these cars and some of the front wings that I've been reading about. So, part of the front wing, changes was to promote overtaking, and the rear wing was to promote overtaking, so there's this bigger pocket of air behind the car, slipstream, being able to overtake, and less downforce, all that stuff. And if you look at the end plates of some of these cars now, the reveal of the car and whether they're going to race with that nose cone, it remains to be seen, because some teams come into the reveal of their car and there's differences to when they actually take that car to the track to race. McLaren, as an example, their end plates on the wing are facing inward, not outward, which is weird. Because you would want to try and create a pocket of air around the car and create the slipstream and they've done the opposite. They've faced the end plates into the wheel of the car. So it doesn't make sense. But unless they're onto some sort of aerodynamic technology that no one else is onto, some of the stuff is just strange.
Sure. It's a red herring for the other teams. It's,
yeah, a lot of the time it is red herrings.
Oh, there was a newbie and he put it on wrong.
Toto Wolff is saying that it's anybody's game this year because there are a lot of changes, and Ferrari's come to the track with a very similar car. They've made it an evolution, not a revolution. Mercedes believe that anybody could win this. Anybody could get ahead in the beginning.
In the beginning.
Yeah.
When does pre-season testing start?
Beginning of end of February. I think it's right at the end of February.
Yeah, because the
and that's usually in Spain, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll tell you in one
second. I think we've seen a couple of the track. I think there was a small video clip doing the rounds on social media of Lewis Hamilton taking out the new Merc. There's also been a few of Haas and Alfa. Nothing from Ferrari yet.
And Racing Point, who are they? I see they've...
That is old... what do they call them? Indian guys.
Force India.
Yeah.
Force India. They're behind it. And the team is now... The resources to show Formula One what it can really do. The Canadian-owned outfit said on Wednesday. These guys, technical director Andrew Green, told the livery launch where a Kenyan betting company, Sports Pesa, was announced as a new title sponsor.
Oy vey. Okay, so just to put you in the loop here.
Yeah, put you in the loop.
When Force India collapsed midway through last season,
yep.
They couldn't just change the name.
Yes.
So when you start the season, your team name is actually the chassis that you're using.
Okay.
So Force India chassis.
Yes.
They were still using the Force India chassis, so they had to keep the name.
Uh-huh.
This new season, they can bring in the new name because now they've got a new chassis.
New chassis.
Name. So they pretty much kept the staff and the machinery and the trucks and everything from Force India. Yeah. It's just been rebranded now as
But Racing interesting to Point. See that there's a Kenyan betting company that's...
Hey... They get money wherever it's coming from.
Wherever they
get it from. Because old Lance Stroll, I think, has pretty much emptied his pockets.
Yep.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, they paid £90 million in August to take over the assets. That is a lot
just
of money.
So that his kid could have a seat.
I mean, well, that's what I was going to say. Now you know how I was getting into Formula One. Your dad's a gazillionaire, and there we go. Do you want to race?
And now he's only a millionaire.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was looking at some of the salaries these guys earn, and the lowest paid driver... earns the equivalent of about 1.5 million rand a year. Now, you would think Formula One driver earns a lot more.
More than that, yeah. That's
and a lot of drivers have taken a massive knock in the income 2018 to 2019.
Sure, but I mean, is that's just their salary from driving?
Yeah.
That obviously excludes endorsements and all that kind of nonsense.
Endorsements and paraphernalia. And yeah. Out of interest, the John Player special car was voted the most beautiful Formula One car ever. To be seen on
yes,
track.
I love that thing.
The most beautiful Formula One car ever was the six-wheeled version.
Oh, no, man.
No, man.
One with six wheels.
No, go away.
I even had Scale Electrics with those.
Check, Jay.
Okay, well, let's talking about racing. George, I actually found a very, very interesting article on your blog, georgemini.co.za, about illegal street racing in South Africa. And I don't know if this is on the up and up, and I'm assuming it is because every now and then, you know, if you know.
When I lived down in Cape Town,
yep.
I used to go to these events.
So did I back in the day at Pure and Cool in Germany.
And I can honestly tell you this has been going on since before... I had my driver's license.
Yeah.
These guys.
If you're a guy of a similar age to the ones around this table and you don't know about illegal street racing when you were a teenager, you didn't live.
Well, my father's 83 and he used to attend on Decker's Road.
Yeah.
He used to go with his big Fiat 2300. So, I mean, this is a thing that dates from the 50s and 60s.
Listen, I think or as long as there's been cars, even. There's always been guys wanting to race.
I think that's the very first race occurred when they made the second car.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
When the second car parked next to the first one.
Yeah.
I mean, that all being said, though, the thing that irritates me the most is these guys' attitude towards illegal street racing.
Mm-hmm.
And, and the fact that they bluntly and blatantly... say that they don't see the harm in it.
They don't see the harm in it until they're at an event one night and somebody that they know loses control of
well,
the car.
Well, ask that guy who lost both his legs.
If he
now sees the harm in it. I think, I mean, I saw an article last week. He survived. He's lost both his legs and his passenger came away with like a minor scratch. So he's happy that he didn't, that no one else died. But
I think the main difference is the speeds these guys attain. 20 years ago, you were running side drafts and a free flow exhaust with
side
Weber carbs.
When last have I heard Weber carbs with side drafts and K&N filters?
Well, now I'm giving away my.
I'm interested. You know about this, George?
I know no more than you think, Mark.
That was what the guys. And I mean, your average speed was about 160 k's an hour.
Yeah.
Now you've got guys in M3s that have been tuned to the tune of about a bar that are easily getting to 300 k's an hour.
Yeah. See, and they're doing it on a normal road.
See, there's something else at play here as well. Yep. In the olden days when I used to modify cars, and when
the olden
probably
days.
Yeah, years ago, let me go black grab my
black and white.
Yeah,
Martin
before
is 80,
launch,
just
before launch control button.
Yeah. To get 10% extra from your car, you had to spend a lot of time and you had to spend a lot of effort. And the cars were quite slow back in those days, like you mentioned. So that 10% would give you a decisive advantage. Now, with everything being turbocharged and electronically controlled, you load a different file and you liberate an extra 80 kilowatts on your GTI.
Okay, so
or an extra 200 on your M3. And it's literally a 5-minute operation to do this.
Because I've always wondered, what are these guys plugging in their computers into the car?
Well, I mean, when they say they chip the car, it's really, like Martin says, it's just software.
My own Toyota, I can decide whether I want to run it at 130 or 160 kilowatt spec.
If you run it at 160, you know that engine's going to deteriorate at a rapid rate. Yeah. So that's why they tune them down from the factories. They want the longevity of the engine.
Okay.
I mean, in my days of the Superboss and the old Rabbit GTI, those things were naturally aspirated with the only thing you could do was turbocharge, and if you turbocharged,
you were the man.
You were the. Yeah. You were the business because you try to find a Garrett T turbo was a problem.
Yeah.
They didn't sell them. You had to go and take it off some Mitsubishi.
And it was seriously expensive as well.
Yeah.
I mean, in real terms, modifying cars have become a lot cheaper now than it was 20 or 30 years ago.
Well, you can't just slap a turbo on a car now.
But it's also become dangerous because there are guys that are building cars who don't actually know what they're doing.
Exactly. And I said that in my piece.
Yes.
Is people that modify cars outside of the professional technical kind of garages, they don't really understand the effects of what they're doing. The effects on the engine, the effects on the cooling system, the effects on the braking system, the effects on the aerodynamics, all of those things.
So there's a knock-on effect. Obviously, the factory made it that way for a reason.
Yeah.
So you go and cut the springs, you've just changed the sprung, unsprung weight of the car, and your handling goes for a ball.
You could lose control of that car so quickly. I mean, you imagine you modify the inside of that engine bay and you change the temperature and airflow inside that engine bay and you could be on fire at 200 k's an hour. You just don't get it,
I mean, look, from my side, because I'm still in the modifying business.
Yes.
When I started this last project with this Toyota Etios thing, the first thing I did was make it handle.
So
I sorted out the suspension, and at that stage, before I did anything else, there was 160 hours of computer simulation just to sort out the suspension, and then I made it stop. And once I was happy that the braking performance was up to spec, then I started adding power.
Okay.
But the boy racers do it the other way around.
They do it the other way around because brakes don't make you go faster.
Yes.
And suspension doesn't make you go faster.
Exactly.
What annoys me is there has been a place in Cape Town to do this.
Yeah.
There are places up in Joburg to do it.
Yeah.
But you know what their gripe is? There's speed bumps on the way in. It screws up the bottom of my car.
And then your car's too low.
The drag strip is not long enough.
So these guys are obviously choosing the highway, and having a race, and you're not ever going to guarantee that there's not going to be another car on the
highway.
Not
only that,
you immediately take that person's
life into your hands. They end up spending so much time and effort on making their cars go faster that they don't pay attention to things like the tyres. I mean, that M3 that hit the barrier and went flying in Cape Town, that
substandard tyres.
So why don't these guys, and I see they also moaning because, I mean, there's nothing stopping them from going to the local traffic department and saying, can we get this road blocked off from
the car? You have to have a special event.
No, they'll have to have an event permit.
Which
but I mean,
means
why can't they go and get it?
Months of applying.
Not only that, they need to have an MSA representative because for some reason MSA has their grubby fingers in everything.
You have to have an ambulance.
You have to have an ambulance and you have to have traffic cops in attendance to control the crowds. You have to have special marshals and it's a massive, massive
they did
story.
They did it in Durban about 6-7 years ago. Was Main Street, or was a Main Street drags.
Yeah.
Main Street, Durban, they closed off a section, put fences up, had grandstands, they had ambulances, they had everything that they needed to run a healthy event.
Yeah.
Second event down, guy in an Evo lost it and hit a tree.
Yeah.
There's a friend of ours.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And right after that,
they said no more.
Never again. Now the guys have taken it onto the highway. So I can understand a place like Durban where there really isn't a facility, but where there is facilities,
then
the guys should not be.
You see, I see it in Pretoria
just
as well.
If you've got enough money to modify your car, if these guys all chipped in, they could go and tar a bloody strip by themselves somewhere. Go and buy a piece of land and tar your own race you know, your thing, and
drive out to Fisante Kraal. But the problem is, with all the modifications, the cars cannot go over a 5 rand coin because I think Camber and Stans brew.
Please don't even get me started.
Camber and Stans.
So brew. The only reason I used to go and watch is to, I don't know, I had mates who were, you know, obviously into that kind of stuff. I enjoyed a hot dog from the Pure and Cool Roadhouse. Yes, that place was the business there.
You see, in Pretoria, every now and again, the Metro cops get a little bit lax, mm-hmm. and the street racers come back. And invariably, someone ends up plying into a crowd or into another adjacent shop in Voortrekker Road, and then the cops are there every Sunday from 6 o'clock, and then it dies down for 6 months, and then the cops relax. And that's how the cycle goes. Yeah. And it's been going like that for decades.
Yeah, so look, it can't really happen. But just quickly, out of that article, I absolutely loved that video that you put in there with
the
Tesla absolutely smashing every other car that comes its way. And it's quite weird to, you know, you get the burnout of the and this electric cars is like, you know.
Do yourself a favor. Humming.
Silent.
Google I think it's a either a Hellcat or a Camaro.
Yes.
One of the two.
Yeah.
Full electric on a drag strip.
Yeah, it's a Camaro.
Thing does a wheelie stand.
Oh, really?
There is a Ford Mustang.
Yeah.
I'll look it up. And
I'm sure you will.
It's a full electric Ford Mustang, fully modified, 0 to 100 in 1.8 seconds.
Melt your face off.
Just see. I mean, I can't believe the off the line speed of that P100.
That's the beauty of electric.
Yes,
it's torque on demand.
Yeah,
it's right there. We need it.
They took a standard P100D with Ludacris. And another video I'll post it at some point. And raced stock standard, no modifications, just P100D with Ludacris, fully charged.
What is Ludacris?
He's
a rapper.
No, that's where I'm going.
It's like Martin says. It's the two biggest electric motors that you can get in a Tesla.
Yeah.
On both wheels, four wheel
drive. With the strongest batteries.
With the strongest batteries.
Strongest inverter and the craziest software.
Yeah. Mm. It's called Ludacris. And the race
they're having on the roof or what?
No. It's Elon Musk's go it fast.
Yes.
And the racist thing against
a jet car.
Against all the supercars.
Oh, is that when they got that big lineup I have seen it. Yeah. Absolutely smokes them.
And smokes them all. Yeah. All of them. Yeah. Every single one.
Anyway, so if you are illegal street racing,
but on a legal track.
On a legal track, please don't go and kill yourself or anybody else. It's actually not about you. If you want to race, but just don't make sure you're not going to put anyone else's
life. Go to the racetrack on Friday night. Pay your $50.
Exactly. Right. The world traveler who was jet setting off to.
Jet setting, my bro.
Yes, all the way. All the way over to India. And I read your article and I really, really enjoyed it, just the way you opened it. Like, I mean, you've driven a lot of cars in a lot of different places.
Yeah.
But it looks like you seriously...
Nothing was as terrifying as Indian traffic.
So just take me, before we get on to this, the XUV 300, let's just chat, tell us about your trip.
Look, did you clap a bunny chow?
No, bunny chow is a Durban
thing. Bunny chow is a Durban thing.
I know, I believe so. It doesn't even exist anymore.
No. I did, however, gain about 3 kilograms in 5 days. The food was absolutely incredible.
Okay.
It just showed me that if anyone knows of a proper Indian restaurant in South Africa, a proper one with like food like they do in India, let me know.
Come to Edenvale. I promise you, I'll show you an Indian restaurant.
Really? All right.
I'll send you the location later.
Drop me a pin.
I'll drop you a pin.
Did you eat proper?
Oh,
good. Amazing.
Amazing. Amazing. Amazing. Also, very friendly people.
Yes.
Until they get behind the wheel.
Okay.
Where they turn into absolute lunatics.
Okay, so you've landed at the airport now.
We flew via Dubai.
Yes.
We flew Emirates. Okay. So via Dubai and then to Mumbai and then another connecting flight down to Goa. Now, mm-hmm. Goa basically is the Cape Town of India.
Yeah, it's party central.
It's party central.
Yeah.
And it's like really laid back and all brew.
Because they're smelling all the curry.
Yeah.
Cape Town's other things. We stayed in a lovely resort. Of the concept of a private beach is foreign to me. In South Africa, there's no such thing. This resort actually owns the beach.
Mm. Well, if you go to...
Go to Llandudno.
On the East Coast. No, above me. What's that big... Mount Edgecombe. They've got their own private beach. But you have to own a house and own the beach as well.
And on the second day... Okay. So we landed in Goa and they put us in shuttle vehicles to take us from the airport to...
Wherever you're going. Yes.
Yeah. All bright-eyed and bushy-tailed looking at all these strange people. And then they started driving. Now, first off, I've never seen so many Suzukis in one place before. And I've also never seen so many scooters. Yeah. And apparently, they're all suicidal.
Well, that's...
It's like there would be three lanes officially.
Sounds like Vietnam.
There would be three lanes in one direction with a concrete divider and three lanes in the other direction. And then they'd effortlessly convert it into at least five or six in each direction.
Okay.
And a guy on the left would decide, no, I actually want to be on the other side at the shop on the other side. And he turned in front of this whole stream of cars. And the weirdest thing is the driver didn't even get excited. I mean, you try that in South Africa. You try that in Joburg.
No,
you will get bluxum.
Yeah, exactly.
No, they just honk the hooter and flash the lights, and there he goes, and everybody goes in their merry ways.
It's exactly like that in Mozambique.
Mm. Really?
It's chaos and anarchy. If there's
but it works, and it's just a beep, 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 beep.
So like I figured out on the way there. Yeah, so I figured out on the way there. Their right-of-way rule works like this. If your front wheel is ahead of the vehicle next to you's front bumper, you have right-of-way. You can do whatever you want. Basically.
I like that.
Yeah.
So I actually had opportunity to live out my, let's call it Grand Theft Auto driving style fantasies.
Okay.
Performing suicidal, what I deemed suicidal overtaking maneuvers, and the bus in the oncoming lane would just actually stop and wait for you to do your thing and get out of the way, and then they'll continue.
So it's like nothing phases nobody.
They're all so calm and laid back, and then they try to kill each other on the road.
Okay, fantastic. Well, that's the roads and stuff in Goa. Then, well, in India, tell us about this this vehicle.
So here's the thing: they put us on the second day. They put us behind the wheel of this Mahindra XUV300, which will be arriving in South Africa in April.
Okay.
This was the international driving reveal. Mm-hmm. So we were part of a contingent of quite a large number of journalists, international guys. And fortunately, the car is really easy to get along with. So I don't have to concentrate on driving the car, on operating the car. I can just concentrate on dodging taxis and buses.
Not dying.
Not like concentrate on not dying. Fortunately, the car is actually really good as well. I drove the 1.5 litre diesel, which is the most undiesely diesel I've ever encountered.
Okay.
Smooth revving and quiet and actually really responsive. And when that thing comes to South Africa in that market segment, there will not be anything capable of matching that thing in terms of power output.
Sure. Okay.
So that's a good sign. Now, this is one of those sub 4 meter Indian cars. They have size classes there.
Okay.
Where a car, well, basically, to be affordable in terms of road taxation, it has to be shorter than 4 meters in total length.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of those. So it's like a proper car with a very truncated tail.
Yes.
Suzuki Desire.
Yes.
There you get the idea.
Good
Lord. Now, this goes up against things like the Suzuki Vitara and the Ford EcoSport and Hyundai Creta. And believe it or not, I believe we will actually have a Mahindra that's more than capable of competing with those cars. The pricing, okay, right, before we get to that, two engines, 82 kilowatts and 200 newton meters from the 1.2 liter turbo petrol, which is respectable, and then 85 kilowatts and 300 newton meters from the 1.5 diesel. Which sounds very good, and then you'd imagine it should cost a bit of a premium as well. But the talk is that they are really working very hard to bring this thing in top spec between 300 and 320,000 rand in today's money.
Very good.
So that's a lot of car for not a lot of money.
It actually looks quite nice. I mean, you know, I was looking at it this morning, and I go, I wonder where they've got their styling from. Looks like they've stole something from
Believe it or not, they apparently own Pininfarina.
Okay.
Mahindra owns a big chunk of Pininfarina.
Well, it's right up there. There's a lot of Indian companies.
But
well,
I mean, if you took that front, there's a visual of this car from front on.
Sure.
You could put a Land Rover badge on.
Exactly.
It, and it would pass off.
So,
well, I don't know if it'd go that far.
I would.
There are some cues from the Evoque and from.
I'm looking at it.
Yeah, there are some cues from Evoque and from Suzuki Vitara
as
well.
How much do you think Mahindra goes over to Tata and has a look at their
this
latest
looks
JLR
a bit like
design
a Tata.
And says, well, you know, that looked quite nice. You mind if we borrow some of that?
I don't think so, actually. I believe the Italians had a fair share here.
From
what
the side,
I saw,
it looks like an Evoque.
And if you look at the wheel arches, there's some Audi Q2 in there as well. So, I mean, they took elements from some nice-looking and successful cars, and they combined it. And then also, it's very highly spec'd. The top model we'll have here, we'll have 7 airbags and dual zone climate control and navigation and everything standard.
Is this white leather trying to copy Tesla?
Yes.
What is it with the Indian guys putting cream and white interiors?
Yes, that's a debriefing after our drives. They asked us what we thought and what would we need or what we would need to see changed for our market.
A grey interior.
And everybody said, please, a grey or grey and black interior. Mm. Because this white or beige thing just doesn't work here. Mm. It's perceived as upmarket in India, but not here. But apart from that, if you look at the general design of the dashboard and the cabin, it's actually quite nice to look at.
Yeah, it does. It looks like
and
a very, very nice.
And very well screwed together as well. Even these cars we drove, which were early built, basically pre-production cars.
Yeah.
Very, very well made and very highly spec'd. So,
nice. So all in all, if you have to give it a rating,
all in all, I can't believe you just said that.
All in all, would you give it a rating out of 10?
A bunny chow rating from Martin.
For its market segment, I'd give it at least an 8, and not a word of lie.
Well, listen, we'll see what. And when is that due?
April.
It's launching
South Africa in April.
Nice.
So you will probably read more about this car on Auto Trader.
Yep.
Because there will be a local launch invitation forthcoming.
Mm.
Now, I've already driven it, so I'll let someone else have a chance.
Yeah.
But they won't be disappointed. And I think if you're in the market for something in this market segment,
yes,
you might want to wait a couple of months and just to check out this thing.
Absolutely.
Because
it's going to compete.
You see the name Mahindra and you immediately think of a Bolero Bucky.
Yeah.
This is nothing
like that. Okay.
All so, right. You know, be well advised.
This
is a good one, and it's coming here, and it will be competitively priced as well.
Lovely, Mart. Well, thanks very much. Just quickly touching on some stuff in the whole electric vibe and what's going down in South Africa. We know that we spoke a while ago about grid cars in partnership with Jaguar Land Rover, who have already invested like $30 million in 82 public electric vehicle charging stations on South Africa's major routes. But I see Shell are to launch charging stations for electric vehicles in South Africa. So Shell South Africa will be launching its first electric vehicle charging stations in its retail network this year with a number of installs based on demand.
Yeah, I don't think Shell's the only one to this race.
No, sure. I mean,
there was already talks about engine doing it.
Yeah,
to Durban.
I think this, to be honest, this is anyone's race.
Yep.
And they, the company that's behind all this stuff is not the fuel companies.
No.
It's a company by the name of Gridcars.
Yes. Yeah.
And, I think whoever partners with Gridcars is going to be the one to really drive this initiative home.
Yeah.
The rest will compete, but Gridcars seem to be serious about what they're doing.
Mm. Do you think they're just going to put in an additional? I mean, you're going to have your petrol pumps, and you're going to have an electric pump and.
Not a pump.
Electric pump.
It'll be
just going to pump electricity.
A bunny chow from India.
Three parking bays. Yeah. On the forklift somewhere with charging stations.
I'm still left at this electric pump.
I promise you now. Well, I mean, it does look like it's a Shell Recharge. It looks like a pumping station. I know you are.
There are certain petrol stations in Los Angeles where you can top up with hydrogen.
Okay.
If
you wanted to.
Yeah.
Then we need a pump for that.
Yeah.
If you don't pump electricity, Lawrence. So anyway,
But well, it's good that we're doing it because we have no choice. Like we've said before,
exactly.
We are subject to the European markets cars, and those are going electric. Everybody knows that. So this is a good thing. This is the
I think this is a really good thing. I think the only thing that's going to be an issue is if there's only three bays and three cars are charging. You know, you're going to sit.
Well, I was at the Tesla factory a couple of weeks ago, and that's exactly what people do. They'll sit and read a book. I saw 10 people in a queue waiting to charge their cars. Sit and read a book and or listen to music and it has to become a planned thing.
Correct.
It, you know, and yes. I would imagine forecourts starting to change.
Yeah.
You know, it's rather a destination than a drive by.
And maybe you can book your time slot.
Here comes a funny comment.
If only they could figure out a way to store energy differently. You know, not in a battery. Maybe in a liquid. I don't know. That you just put this liquid in your car and you can get
Why do you want to drive around with this liquid swishing all over the place that can blow you up at any freaking minute?
You're talking about hydrogen?
Hydrogen fuel gas.
On that bombshell, we will have to end the show here, guys. Thanks very much for tuning in. Log on to autotrader.co.za. Martin's article's there. The news and reviews, the guys, our content team are always out there putting up new stuff. So log on to autotrader.co.za and go and check out all the stuff that's been going down. And, man, everybody, have a good week.
There we go. Thank you.
Cheers.
This is CliffCentral.com.